this is Bagel Tech Big. It's the weekend show from the weekend network that isn't at the weekend anymore-ish. So there you go. We're here to talk all things from the week in technology, and it's not over yet, but never mind, it's not going to stop us. We've got some fantastic stuff that we're hoping that Eric Lanigan's going to guide us through, because he's picked one of the stories and none of us have read it, so this whole podcast could be half an hour of complete silence of us just reading the story that Eric sent us. The rest, though, we all prep for.
Well, hang on, you and I have to read it too now. Slow down a bit.
Well, we all prep for the rest, though, never fear. Joining me... top left, Mr. Eric Lanigan. No, that's not even Eric Lanigan. That's
James is just
I'd start again, but it wouldn't make any difference.
Top left. How'd I get up in the top left?
Let's do it the other way around. So, bottom left, James Lanigan. No. Eric Hart. No.
No.
Eric Lanigan.
Hey, everybody.
From California. How's it going there, mate?
Good. It's nice and sunny. Good weather.
Damn you. It's pissing down with rain here.
Oh, really?
I was going to use a struggle word.
It got so bad today. I was teaching in a place that had a tin roof, you know, like a corrugated tin roof. And then there was just like a suspended ceiling separating us from the tin roof. And about 3 o'clock this afternoon, I thought I couldn't shout any louder and make myself heard. So we ended up having a coffee break.
Oh, man. Right,
working in a giant drum solo.
Yeah, it was bad. So it's nice to know that you're sunning yourself, mate, but we've disrupted your Coke drinking session to come in and just talk about tech for a while.
Yeah, Coke Zero. I hardly endorse this product.
I'm going to try it. I've not tried it because I thought it was just full of aspartame and it'd kill me. So it's full of other stuff that's going to kill me, you're saying that.
Exactly. It's an alternative artificial sweetener that just came onto the market, at least in this country, a couple of years ago for FDA approved. And it makes the best Coke I've ever had. So there you go.
Chat room suggested we've got new sponsors. I've got to say, I think you should spread the load on your carcinogens. Don't focus on one too much.
Spread them out. Yeah. Throw in some Splenda, toss in some sweet and low, even it out.
Alex says zero taste. Next to Eric, we've got Sarah, our sysadmin, who's just about to launch our new site, aren't you?
I thought you were going up rather than across there, but hopefully it will be within a few days, yes.
In the next couple of days, there'll be a new site out there that looks fantastic, designed for us by Mr. Russ Cluett. SF Drummer in the chat room, he's there, he is. He's finished practice early. And it looks absolutely spangly gorgeous, super fantastic, going smoothly till 2 o'clock yesterday morning.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes, having some fun and games with a few bits, but I'm really pleased with the progress. I thought it was going to take me some longer to get through some of the things. A couple of bits I think we may well leave until after we've gone live. I'm not going to say what they are, but
we've got stuff that we haven't finished from Christmas about going live.
I know, I'm really pleased with it. So I think I need to do some cross browser testing and things. And
if you need a website designing, you need to speak to Mr. Russ Cluett at SF Drummer on Twitter. He's frigging awesome. There you go. Joining us from the Batcave, by the looks, Mike Hurley. How's it going, mate?
Very well. Why am I in the Batcave?
Well, your video's frozen. It's all dark as well, so.
Oh, I don't know what's going on tonight. Oh, leave my camera's gone off. How about that?
And it's back. And it's off. And it's back.
There we go.
How's the week been?
It's been good, thank you. And very, very good. Warm, hot on the tube, but it's been good.
Oh, that's not good.
It's not a euphemism.
Hot on the tube. It's all mine,
It's hot and sticky and nasty, isn't it?
But I mean, you normally get a good airflow through, don't you?
No, you're kidding.
Not a rush hour.
Oh, okay.
Are you basing it on the one journey that you made a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, that was pretty nasty. That was bad enough to put me off the tube for another 10 years.
Mm. 3 hours a
and
day,
last,
friend, three
but
hours
by
a day.
No means least, the one that looks exactly like Eric Lanigan. You can hardly tell them apart. Only their mothers would know. James Hart. That was a joke, by the way, Eric, before you get upset. James has put his mute on.
For a minute there, I thought maybe you'd circled up and then come back down around at the bottom left, and I was about to say hi. Hi, you and hi, everybody.
One more time around.
James the Hart, how you doing, mate?
I'm okay, thank you. Freshly back from my family holiday in Germany, which is the obvious holiday location.
Germany's a lovely place.
I love it, absolutely. I didn't get to taste any of the wheat beer nor the fantastic German wine, which is something of a secret these days.
Yeah, I'm not a wine lover. Good. Weiss beer is definitely something you need to have.
Yeah, but I was with the family, and so we're stumbling around the streets of Dortmund would not have been pretty.
Dunkel.
Dunkel.
Ein Dunkelbitter. That's what we need. The week in technology. What has happened? What has not happened? Not an awful lot again. It's not very good for tech news at the moment, is it?
Well, it's silly season, isn't
it? It's the summer. Everyone's out basking and then only coming in for an hour with their Coke Zero to do a tech show and then buggering off again.
Just find out who's infringed patents this week.
I don't know. We've got a couple of stories we can go through. First one, Kingston HyperX have released a group of SSDs, which is not really a particularly fantastic story on its own. 120 gigabytes of storage for $270 and 240 gigabytes of storage for $520. I've had a look at the HyperX's here in the UK. We can't get them for under £500. So that's going to be nearer that's probably nearly $5,000 now, isn't it, based on the way that the US currency is going. In fact, actually, you could be on one-to-one with the Philippines soon. Dollar to peso.
Give them the euro.
Give them the euro instead. Yeah, that's doing well.
Could be any worse.
SSDs, why are they so bloody expensive?
Because hard disk drives are still around.
So you think that we're going to have to lose the old tech before the new tech will...
Yeah, because it's something fancy and new, then maybe the tech companies feel that they can charge a little bit extra for it.
Well, I mean, a fancy I won't disagree with, but how new is SSDs with SATA connections? Three to 4 years?
I've had my Mac Mini now for nearly 5 years, and I think it was about a year and a half in that I thought, this thing's starting to get slow. The best solution for a single component I could change in it, apart from putting more memory in, which I did already, was to get an SSD hard drive, because they go like stink, and it just makes the whole thing a lot quicker. But I couldn't afford it. I couldn't even afford an 80 gig SSD hard drive, and they haven't come down in price. I was just looking at Amazon. You can get yourself a 60 gig for £80. 60 gig. That's ridiculous.
Does seem a lot on the bang to buck. What's the prices like in the States, Eric?
Well, it's roughly that. I looked it up. I mean, it's still so expensive that I would never put it into a machine besides a MacBook Air, you know, that comes with that and has it built in, because they are still, you know, many, many, many orders of magnitude more expensive than hard drives.
I mean, I've been sitting thinking about, I've got two drives in my laptop. I took the optical drive bay out and I've put the conversion kit in. So I've got 2 1-terabyte drives at the moment, and I don't use all the space. I've never used all the space. So actually I could get away with one of those being a 1 terabyte drive and the other one being a boot disk, which is significantly faster. I don't think I could manage 128 gigabytes, but 256 would be okay. And I was sitting thinking that 256 wasn't going to break the bank, because I figured it'd be about £200, £250. I can't get a 256 for under £300 here. So that's $500. Not a bit of it. And if you start going up to 512, you're talking about forking out a minimum of £600 to £700. So that's $1,000 before you even start.
So I'm wondering if it is the whole TFT versus CRT screen kind of thing, until they flooded them, until this tipping point where everybody started having them. Was it at that point that the prices came down? Because it was only 3 or 4 years ago that LCD monitors were still a little bit more expensive. You know, you could buy a 17-inch one, and that was the dog's doodah. That would be £250. And now you can get a 21-inch screen for less than £100.
£250 buys you a cinema now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, Eric's point was about the fact that... Sorry, Eric's point. God, my names are crap tonight. Mike's point was about the fact that the old technology's got to die off before the new one comes through, but that'll never happen, will it?
Eventually. I mean, I just think that it's not so much it's got to die off. There's got to be higher penetration. I mean, aside from the MacBook Air, does it come standard on any other machine?
Arguably, it comes standard on any Android, you know, on any phone device, because that's what they're using. They're using a solid state disk to store the stuff that you've got on it. Or are we talking about the Stripe data for speed?
I'm willing to be corrected here, but isn't the type of flash memory that's in phones completely different from SSD?
Yeah, it is slightly different. Memory. It's slightly different, at least from the ones. I think the ones in phones are more comparable to what you'd find in like a USB key than on a real
compact flash
boot disk.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because SSD just stands for solid state drive, and they are solid state drives. So there's obviously a specification that I'm missing out on here somewhere. Well, the fact that it probably is some striping.
Well, it has something to do with write speed and also reliability, because you know how with SSDs, unlike hard drives, they all have a very limited amount of times they can be read to or written to those, what are they called, cells?
Yep.
And so the ones for phones, obviously, because they're just playing back basic media like movies and music, and aren't, you know, doing hardcore CPU work that need fast reads and writes to that little bit of memory. They typically get the cheaper kind, but when you're talking like the super high performance, like the biggest upgrade you can make on a PC, that is a different kind that's designed for speed and higher durability.
Yeah, maybe that explains why they are so much more expensive, because it is state of the art.
Oh, you've got the current obvious corrections at the moment for like the tsunami because of reduced supply, increased demand. That always leads to a higher level price than you're perhaps used to. But even so, they don't seem to have come down really much at all in the last few years. And I was just interested to talk about why, because I want them to be cheaper because I want one.
Well, I think it's interesting. Do you guys think that a lot of the computer hardware has not come down in price like it has in previous years and previous decades at quite that speed? I think I'm trying to double check right now. Doesn't Apple still sell some computers that by default come with 2 gigabytes? Yeah, their lowest end MacBook Air still comes with 2 gigabytes of RAM. 2 gigabytes of RAM on a laptop. I mean, first of all, obviously that's the same starting point that the MacBook Airs had when they came out in October. So from basic laws of Moore's Law and so forth, how technology moves forward, we would expect that this many months later, you could get more RAM for the same money. That's not the case, or even with the SSD drive. Look also at some of their other laptops, look at their iPhones. The iPhone 4s right now, for their storage, for the amount of memory they come with, maxing out at 32 gigabytes, same price as the iPhone 3GSs were almost 2 years ago. So it seems in general to be a much more slowly decreasing price than there used to be, you know, 10 years ago.
Yes, that's backed up with some research I was doing earlier about the Intel Core i7 processor, which has been around in various forms for coming up on 3 years now. And it still costs close to about £200 to buy the base model i7 processor. So people are still sticking quad cores and dual core, bog standard Pentium core duos into machines because the next level up is just too expensive to fit. It's really crazy. Although graphics cards now, you can buy a 1 gigabyte graphics card for £40. So there's some things which are coming down in price.
There's comments in the chat room here. Carl saying, I've bought a 2 terabyte drive recently for my Drobo. He's filled his 5-bay Drobo with 2 terabyte drives, £60 a piece for 2 terabytes of spinning media.
I think hard drives are coming down. They're continuing to promise in price, but that's about it.
Really tumbled. Tone in the chat room saying, so basically we're saying after years of acceleration, Moore's law is stalled.
I was actually sitting here listening to this, and I'm sort of thinking, I wonder if it could be something more to do with the economy, that the prices haven't come down, or they would have come down, apart from the fact that we're in an inflating economy at the moment.
Well, one of the things that I was thinking is the fact that there's a lot of people out there who are looking at reduced bottom lines, and they're trying to eke out as much as they possibly can from the remaining customer base that they've got. And come hell or high water, they're going to charge the price because they think that technology at the moment is the only buoyant market. And I mean, if you look at the Apple results, they're buying up SSDs and Core i5, i7 processors. They've got most of what's available out there on the market for their own equipment, and they're charging a premium price for that, and they've got money in the bank. And while the demand is high and the supply is low, there will always be an inflated price. Market conditions.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm just thinking, if what you were just saying about why have i5s and i7s not coming down, if Apple are buying up the stock,
well, I don't
that might explain why the price is higher.
I think can't make them quick enough.
I think I'm right in saying that the only item in the Mac lineup now that doesn't have Core i5 or i7 is the Pro.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
So if they're selling shed loads of computers, they're making up 50% of the netbook market at the moment. So 56% of the netbook market is Apple netbooks. Those Apple netbooks, by virtue of the fact they're going out, that's 50% of the netbook Core i5, i7 processors that are out there. They're buying up 50% of those processors available for netbooks.
That might have just answered James's question.
There's a big demand out there and there's a limited supply, plain and simple.
You know, I'm surprised we don't see more hybrid SSD and hard drive solutions in all of our stuff, laptops, desktops. I mean, the iMac for a few years now has been able to be custom ordered so that it includes like a 256 gigabyte SSD that I believe is the only machine Apple's ever sold or only configuration Apple officially endorses that stores its home folder and its operating system separately. The user folder, which is primarily, large chunks of the user's data, is stored on the hard drive. So your iTunes library and all the huge media libraries that Apple prefers to store in a user's home folder, that's on the hard disk, 2 terabyte hard disk. And then you've got all the system files and the swap file and the virtual memory sitting on that SSD. And so that machine flies, but it's like it's $500 to add that SSD. And I don't know why it's not more popular and more easily available for all systems, Windows alike, to have just a little bit of that SSD in there. You know, the operating systems nowadays are not that big. We know Lion in its entirety fits within 4 gigabytes. The swap file, the hard drive based RAM file on a hard disk, when you're talking like a machine that has like 4 gigs of RAM, 6 gigs, even 12 gigs, is not that big. You could put a 64 gigabyte SSD in a PC or a Mac and have that make a huge difference if that were supported better by the operating systems and by the OEMs who are, letting you custom build these things and then configuring the OS to store the system files on a separate drive than the other files. What do you guys think about that?
It's certainly a way of getting higher performance out of a machine if you put all the paging files and everything on that. I was going to say, I'm not surprised it's that they're doing that, because obviously with Lion, I assume it is, as it is with OS X, it's obviously built on Linux. It's a lot easier to actually set the operating system up like that.
With separately from partition,
It's actually OpenBSD, but it's near enough,
It's the same sort of thing,
Well, now here's the next thought. Is there a move from Apple to realise the potential of the low-cost, low-size SSDs? Because in what they're doing now, they're asking a lot of developers to create self-contained packages of programs. One of the things that's happened to me after I had the little episode with 10.6.8 was I reinstalled everything on my main computer, put all my applications off to one side. Every single one of those applications runs superbly now from a third-party drive that's connected via USB. If I start putting that onto a 1 terabyte drive on a separate file, I'm not using up file space, and all I'm doing is running the OS on maybe a 16 gig SSD that just sits in there, and all it does is run OS, because now none of the applications need to sit within the OS. They all can sit in their own little packages off on a separate drive.
Which is great for the people who are capable of doing that, but when you go to a shop and want to buy a machine, you want it all fitted for you, and they're simply not doing it. And I think it's brilliant. It's a really clever idea. Eric, you can market that.
What? Wait, tell me again. What did I say?
The SSD and the hard drive, both sort of married together in one machine.
Yeah, and someone
started that. It was like...
There's been hybrid drives.
There was an announcement, like Seagate or someone makes a version, but it's like only for 2.5-inch laptop disks or something that has 8 gigs or something of solid state built in, or just like a super big, super fast cache, multi-gigabytes large that like stores just your, like, I guess it figures out what are the OS files by what is loaded at start time, and that gets cached into that faster area. But I don't know why we're not seeing that on desktop hard drives or across other machines, other systems, or for lower prices.
Momentus XT is the drive. Mm-hmm. And it's a hybrid drive, 7,200 RPM drive with a minor SSD added to it that just gives you enough for startup.
Price on that?
Yeah, £71 for 500 gig. That's kind of worrying.
Oh, is that a lot?
No. £71, that's $100.
And how big's the SSD part?
Well, the SSD part should probably be
8 gig,
fairly... No, for... that's for 500 gig.
Yeah, but it's not all SSD.
How big is the SSD partition?
I'm trying to find.
By the way, even laptop hard drives have grown much more slowly than I think they have in years past. I mean, I'm just trying to think of how I think, you know, the last computer that I bought that maxed out at 2 gigabytes of RAM, or no, I have to say the first one that did, last one, I guess, was in like 2006. It was like the first MacBook Pro on the market. And now, what is this, like 6 years later, they're still selling machines that max out at 2 gigabytes?
Nearly all of them.
Same with the, CPUs are very hard to compare now, partly because they're all the same gigahertz. And from year after year, the gigahertz no longer changes. It's just what they do. You know, that's kind of secret. It's not as easy to compare numerically from chip to chip.
That's right. It's the performance rather than the speed. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you say, James?
It's the performance rather than the speed. It's the benchmarking they do for the same number of operations in a large number of operations in the same clock number of clock cycles, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's how they measure the performance.
The interesting go ahead. Sorry, Eric.
Picking a CPU is different. But then also, yeah, laptop hard drives. I mean, I'm just thinking that the computers that I owned when I was, you know, younger, and it was like in school, the difference between, like, you know, 1994 and 98 or 98 and, you know, whenever I got a computer after that, I mean, it was like the differences were, it'd be like triple the RAM, quadruple the hard drive space. And it's just not the case anymore. Now, when you even look back like 6 years ago to 2005, 2004, a lot of it's the 2 gigabytes of RAM systems, you know, 320 gigabyte hard drive.
I'm specking up a new PC for my daughter because she's getting very frustrated that she can't run the 3D software, 3D sort of games that my son plays. And it looks like I'm specking up the same machine that he got 2.5 years ago. I think maybe sort of the 75% of the cost. I'm not getting anything better because I can't.
There's no point.
And it's not really, they're not really cheaper, are they, James? Like, it's not that the base price is just reducing. It's that they've kind of just stayed at the same price, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you would have found that the highest level commercial PC that was available at Tiny Computers 10 years ago or PC World or something like that would rush you generally between £1,500 and £1,600, mm-hmm. roughly $2,000. And that was kind of consistent. And what happened was the price stayed the same, but the spec got a bit better. And that was the only thing that advanced, the price never moved. This hybrid drive, you're talking about a 7200, 500 gig spinning media in it, and then 4 gig of solid state NAND flash. Now, again, I'll gladly be corrected because I'm no techie on this, but my understanding of NAND flash is it's all right for booting up from sleep, but you couldn't run an OS on it.
That's the bulk standard.
That's not flash, an SSD.
Yeah. That's not it.
I think NAND flash is what's in the iPhone, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's no good for running a computer OS off it.
Right. Okay.
So that's SSD is right. It is solid state. There's no arguing with that, but it's not the kind of stuff that you'd be expecting in an SSD drive that you bought. That's what I was saying. I knew there was a separation between the two types of solid state, but I didn't know what it was.
I wonder if perhaps the economic downturn is being used by some companies as an excuse to recover some of their older profit margins, because we know how extremely low some of those margins have gotten. And now if we're seeing if people's purchasing has slown, and also the prices remain the same, then maybe they are slowly recuperating some of those, increasing their margins. Because like you said, Ewan, a few seconds ago, the average price of a PC and a phone and the things that we buy are much lower than they used to be. And part of that is because people's uses have plateaued to a certain extent. You know, email was you could do email as well as you could now as you could, you know, 10 years ago on the top of the line machine then. So people are spending less per machine, per PC. If you look at some of the flyers of PCs, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it's like, you know, advertising a cheap machine at like $2,500. And then you remember with inflation, that's a huge difference compared to now. Where people think $1,000 for a PC is outrageous now. So I think people's needs have slowed down, but I think it's interesting that the actual prices of the components and the machines have not really slowed the way that they used to. So I wonder if there's a little bit of a, they're working together there. The companies see that and they say, well, we'll keep them. People aren't buying anyway, so we may as well hold on to our existing inventory of these parts and just kind of gradually raise our profit margins.
I'm wondering actually if Windows 7 hasn't had a bit of an impact in it as well, because Vista was intended to sort of embrace the power of the PC, and that was a complete failure because the PCs were just about enough to keep up with them. Windows 7 has come along going, yeah, I'll run on that, that's fine. And it hasn't forced anybody to refresh the ranges as fast as it has been. Put that together with the business, which I think are pretty much the main buyers of computers these days, certainly the big brand ones. You get thousands of them being rolled out in corporations across the place. When the replacements take place, they don't need anything more than what's being done at the moment, and therefore the market isn't really changing at all.
Is it fair
because
to
it
say,
doesn't have to.
Is it fair to say that part of the reasoning is the fact that OSs aren't the cycle hogs that they used to be as well, comparatively speaking to the spec of the computers that are now being installed on and
they're
being run on?
For day-to-day stuff, no.
They're not taking up the CPU cycles they ever were. They're not the hog of processing power that they used to be relative to the spec of the computer.
Okay. I think some of those things like the background processes certainly have plateaued in the amount of resources they need, and the other things have continued to grow up around them that aren't being utilized fully.
And virus software is a great example, I think. You know, the number of CPU cycles that virus software uses in that, yes, there's been development, yes, it's improved, but basically it just doesn't need to take the proportion of hardware time that it used to. Good conversation.
I'm still trying to work out what the V word I just used was.
The V word?
Yeah, apparently.
Vax. Virginia.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Oh, Vista. Got
Vista,
you now.
Right. Yeah. Vista was a good system.
Yeah, okay. Next.
I've always said it, and no one ever believes me, but Vista had a better file management process than any other OS that there's ever been. There you go.
Are you able to explain that?
I am, because what you used to do was you used to take your files and you used to drag them across and copy them. And if they found one that was duplicated, they didn't go into a brain freeze and say, oh, I found something that I can't work on, therefore I'm going to stop until he comes and says that's okay. It used to just transfer all the files and it would leave the ones where it had got conflicts for the ends, and it would show you a picture of both of them, say, do you want to keep this one or this one or both? This one or this one or both? This one or this one or both? And it was brilliant. You could leave it to run 10 gigs worth of stuff overnight and then come down in the morning, there'd be 20 photos that you had to cancel or make a decision on, rather than doing 5 photos, hitting a conflict and then stopping. And then when you come down and say, no, I want to keep that one, it goes, okay, thanks. You've still got 9.96 gig to copy.
Yeah, I know. Did
they take that out of 7?
7... I've never used 7, so I don't know whether it does it or not, but that was the thing. I always loved Vista for file management.
I've not done any large-scale movement of stuff to find that out yet. But I can't imagine why they would take that out. If it was in Vista, why would they take it out in Windows 7?
Is that what's still in 7? I think it's still in 7. Says
I would imagine it is, because, yeah, it's you reminded me, I've forgotten, that the old Windows behavior was that it would just go alphabetically through your files, and then if it, in the middle of the night, hit one that it was a duplicate, it would just stop right there.
Exactly.
Like you were still sitting there.
Which Finder still does. Finder still does that.
The classic one is if you try and compress the hard drive in XP.
The other thing, Russ in the chat room saying, clearly you were never an Amiga user, Ewan, because obviously Amiga had the better file handling system. No, I wasn't. I do appreciate that.
Well, wait a minute, Ewan, because I think I was saying this last week, that this is one of the things that I hate about Lion, that they changed for no good reason, as far as I can tell. Snow Leopard, when you would go to drag and drop stuff and copy files to a different folder, it would scan all the files ahead of time. So it would prompt you for, do you want to replace or ignore the duplicates before it started copying anything. So you could still be sitting there. Yeah, it went through a little bit of a preparing to copy files routine. But if you sat through that, then you'd get the prompts before it ever did in the actual copying.
But the problem with that was it never showed you what the duplicates were. It just showed you the file name. If your file name, this is a great example for old camera users. Old camera users, I've got some files the other day that I wanted to copy across into a different folder. And I just dragged them and dropped them from several different folders into one main folder. And I got a, do you want to overwrite? And I thought, well, I know I've done a few earlier, so it probably wants to overwrite those. Yes, I'll overwrite. And actually what it happened was I'd got an old camera where the cycling on the files had just basically rolled over and started again. And actually I took a whole load of photos and overwrote them with with effectively other photos that were file named the same. And that was a real issue. Whereas with Vista, you would have got the first picture and the second picture beside visually to then decide which one you wanted to keep. Finder
like a little quick view.
Yeah. Finder as an OS for file handling is a dog, absolute dog. There's an awful lot actually within Apple's OS which is not state of the art, not good practice, and some of the applications that come with it. I've always harped on about mail, calendar, address book. They're god awful things. And I mean, people go on about mail being improved in Lion, but if the mail's been improved to the standard and no further than it is in iOS 5, then I'm sorry, but it's still not a lot better. It could still be tons more than it currently is.
I was trying to look through my memory of versioning file systems, because I thought to myself, I'm sure I've seen an advert for a file system where as soon as you drag a file over one that already exists, it says, I notice you've already got a file called that, I'll call it another thing. And the only two I could think of were OpenVMS, which I still use at work a little bit, and Dropbox. So maybe Dropbox is the answer.
Well, Lion does that now too. But it does that in a weird way, because with Snow Leopard, that's interesting. I didn't know that Vista would show you like thumbnails of certain file types. That's really useful. Apple should totally do that. But at least in Snow Leopard, it would say when you first copied stuff, what do you want to do? You want to replace or ignore? Just don't,
no, exactly.
Don't
it did it ahead of time. I grant you that. I think that's a very fair point. But problem was, when it had a conflict, it didn't give you anything other than the file name. And it was very easy to lose files in the process.
Yeah,
but you can't get two side by side in the same file.
Now in Lion, the only option you have is copy duplicates with a file name that says like such and such copy,
right,
or cancel the whole operation, which is crazy. Because when I go to archive stuff, very often I have all these files in a single folder, and I'll just say, well, have I copied these off to my backup drive yet? And I'll just grab them all, throw them over there. Mm-hmm. If it says these files already exist in the location, what do you want to do? I say ignore, apply to all, let it do its thing. Now I can't do that. The only option is I copy all of them over again, or I abort the entire procedure, which is crazy.
I'm getting to the stage where I want to try Lion, and I've been sitting thinking about putting it on the machines, and then someone says something, it makes me think, no, don't do it. No, don't do it. And yesterday I said to the wife, I'm going to put Lion on your MacBook.
On hers.
And she said, oh, okay. And then she stopped. She said, what's that then? Oh, it's a new operating system. Why are you putting it on mine? Because I don't know if it's going to work on my machines. Oh, very nice. Use my machine, why don't you? All right, do you want me to explain more about Lion? No. I just don't want it on my machine. Why not? You're not going to notice much of a difference at all, but I'll be able to see whether I want to put it on my machines. No, you're not using mine as a test. No, I'm not having that. It took me a year to teach her how to switch it on.
I can understand.
You did tell her it might not work effectively. That might be the reason.
She's not listening to this podcast either. Shut up, Mike.
I would, even if you did that to me, I'd be suspicious, because I've been thinking, hang on a minute, why is he not testing
but
his
phone? No, hang on a second. We're talking about you. Me doing that to you is entirely different from doing it to a woman who doesn't know how to switch it off.
Thin ice, Ewan. Thin ice.
No, it's got nothing to do with the sexes, mate. It's to do with the fact that Sarah knows how to switch it on and off at least, and a bit more.
Yeah.
Quite a bit more.
But all it will take is for someone, for your other half to come across something she doesn't recognise, and it for it to be terribly, terrifyingly scary, and it all goes horrible. No, it's
the way she looks at me some mornings.
It's the fact that that you said, no, it's fine, it's okay. It's no.
The way she looks at me some mornings, mate, that happens every day. There we go. Next story. Shock and awe, according to Ars Technica. The British government has agreed that copyright has gone too far and it has to be amended. I was so excited about this. I've got to say, though, I'm not holding my breath because it's no implementation yet. But effectively, Digital Millennium Copyright Act could end up... Not Digital Millennium, that's American, isn't it? Digital Economy Act, there we go, thank you. Could be repealed and could be heavily replaced. They're talking about some really interesting changes. Personal CD ripping and DVD ripping, they're saying, should be legalised as long as it's for personal function. There's no clarity on that, though, as whether you're talking about if you have to rip through copy protection. If you have to rip through copy protection, that may still be deemed to be illegal, in inverted commas. And they've been quite innovative here, because I really wouldn't have credited government with the ability to see through a EULA sticker as being an ad hoc contract prohibiting the ripping of, because they're actually saying that EULA stickers that say that you can't rip would be a form of unfair contract and therefore would be invalid, which I think is phenomenal. I mean, that's an enormous leap forward.
Do you have the last...
Sorry, go on.
Go ahead.
Yes, we do, Eric.
Yes, we do.
So I don't think we have those here. So tell me a little bit about those. You have EULA stickers on your CDs that take away rights that otherwise citizens would have?
Yes. I mean, effectively, what happens is some media is actually sealed with a band, and there's a little tiny contractual statement on it that says that by opening this, you guarantee or ensure that you're not going to steal, rip, theft, copyright breach, etc., etc.
Well, they normally just say you agree to the EULA, don't they?
Yeah.
Which is inside that you haven't read yet.
They give a little bit of a hint of what's to come, yeah,
exactly,
to be fair.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I wonder what the legal basis is for why I've never seen that over here. Because, I mean, we have that on all of our software, but I've never once seen that on a CD, DVD, any type of a movie or film or music of any kind.
You'd be surprised, because you've probably got EULAs that bind you. There may not be stickers that go around the top or on the front or on the back, but you've probably got a EULA within the... you've got a licensing act for it. You've got licensing abilities within it. That constitutes... EULA, end user license agreement. What you can and can't do. All of the DVDs that you buy, they'll tell you that you can't play them in a public place without prior agreement or compensation. They'll tell you that you shouldn't be showing them to your friends at house parties, to be honest.
You know, that we totally have those, but I always thought that those were coming from the government and not from... normally, you think of a EULA as a contract between the manufacturer.
No, those are contractors. Basically, your contract law is identical to the contract law that we have here in the UK. Ostensibly, it follows the same principles. When I say identical, it's similar. Fulfillment of a contract is by agreement, but it can also be by action. So it's basically saying, if you run your finger through this, if you rip this seal, you're agreeing to the contract to which it pertains. So therefore, by running your thumb through the seal, your action is agreeing to the contractual bind that's within the EULA.
Oh, I get that. The distinction I'm making is that while we've always seen that here for any software, I've never seen it for, and hardware too, I've just never seen it happen for... media, music and movies, or video games.
I would suggest you go and get a CD or a DVD and have a look, and you will find some pseudo licensing agreement there. It's a EULA, and it's an end user license agreement, whether it says EULA on it or not. Go ahead. Well, come on, stand up.
I'll go get some CDs because what they say, though, is they're all decked out with all this FBI warning. FBI, don't forget, this is illegal. It's illegal. And they always reference the FBI or that it's a federal offense. They never say that it's a contract between like Warner Music or Universal Studios, a DVD.
Yeah. No.
And you and the user, but I see that with software constantly.
Well, you've got to think of the title that you've got here. End user license agreement. So an agreement is an agreement between you and another party. So an agreement is a contract. Same as simple as that. It is a contract in law.
I've just got this fantastic... I've got the new They Might Be Giants album this week, and it says... It just simply says, unauthorized duplication is a violation of applicable laws. How broad is that?
It's probably no real use.
Exactly. It's not a EULA.
That's what we have.
Yeah, no. There's always probably good. Something inside that says that the license agreement allows for the playing of
this now.
For personal use, etc., etc. That's changed for the rest of the night then. Do you want me to get you a Horlicks, old boy? hang on, we've got copyright law changes to support cloud music services. Clothed HQ has put in the chat room. Thank you, Steve. Right.
I have to say, my respect for Vince Cable has really grown this year. He was sorting out the Sky TV merger thing, because he was the one who was battling against Sky, saying, look, you guys can't do this. And now he's the one who's figureheading this, actually, the sensible thing. We can actually now legitimately rip a CD to an MP3.
You're impressed with Vince Cable because he read out a pre-prepared statement someone else had written for him.
Well, if he's claiming credit for it, what the hell?
Well, also, he's what he said bloke. About the Sky doctor, thing, you know. is seemed to be coming true as well.
Yeah. Comment in the chat room, did they explain it to the government using crayons? And the same person said, at least he can read slowly.
I tell you what, the one thing I think about with EULA is we all know it stands for End User License Agreement. Not too long ago on a radio station, which shall remain nameless, a so-called technical expert...
Wasn't that London something or other?
Shut up.
You can't. You can say it. It was a statement of fact.
Tried to convince this audience, and it's supposed to be a technical guru, that it stood for European Union License Agreement.
Very good. This is good audio, isn't it? We're all sitting here reading CD covers. What Absolutely. A podcast. What a podcast. Unrivaled.
Pause the podcast now and read a CD of your choice.
You can see why we had three episodes in the top 30 this week, can't you? Huzzah.
Now, did you find a EULA that's written like a contract between the distributor and the end user?
Oh, I hate it when Eric Lanigan tries to bloody trip me up when I've made some all-sweeping statement that's actually bull.
The problem is, Eric, we've ripped all the plastic off our CDs. It's not there anymore.
Mine's at the opposite end of the office and my earphones don't reach that far. And I'm the host. I can't go anywhere.
By downloading this podcast, you conform to any regulations that UN sees fit.
By downloading this podcast, you are entitled to gratitude and thanks. For listening to it, we'll double it. Mike's given up all hope. He's drunk his drink now and he's sitting thinking, oh God, I wish I could go downstairs and have a pee.
I'm reading DVD cases.
It's got that bad.
I haven't got one within reach.
What have you found a EULA as well, Mike?
No, I haven't. No.
Not the DVDs he's looking at.
There you go.
No, they don't. They tend not to have any laws binding.
No, see, here's this is the only Blu-ray I ever actually bought. Back to the Future trilogy.
You've got some that's fresh. Then
good choice.
We've got the copyright law of 1988 here.
Sorry, what?
We've got the copyright law of 1988. You weren't even born.
Well, this just came out last year.
A film the film was made in the year you were born, dude.
Before.
Thank you.
Shut up, Eric.
That makes me feel even worse. Get on with it.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Warning for private use only. Federal law provides severe civil and criminal penalties for unauthorized reproduction, distribution, or exhibition of copyright motion pictures and video formats. And that's all it says. And that's consistent with what I've always seen, is that they remind you what the law is and what your agreement with the government is and the FBI. And they don't say anything about your agreement with Universal or Sony or whoever's selling you the product.
This Howard Jones cassette has just said made in Germany.
Howard Jones, good God, 1981. Howard Jones, and it's a cassette. It's an audio cassette. Do you remember those?
Yeah, oh. I can do that.
Are you reaching for reel-to-reel, Sarah?
Not quite.
8-track.
Was this one I recorded myself off the radio?
Oh, shush!
Now, back then, home recording is killing music.
No, it's a Radio 4 play.
Paul in the chat room saying, it's Back to the Future. Carl's putting underneath, no, it's the past. Howard Jones, please feel back free to do whatever you like with it. Anyway, moving on.
Back to the EULA. I like that. That's got to be the title, Eric.
Back to the EULA. That's
yeah,
a good one.
Yeah, I like
one.
That.
Hang on, let me write that down because I bloody forget it otherwise.
It just really annoys me that it just says this software is licensed, not sold. What am I paying for? Like, it just annoys me.
You're paying for use. That's the key part. Yes. You're not paying to own the software. You're paying to use the program.
But yeah, I can't return it. So this Xbox game, I wouldn't be able to return that.
Well, why would you return something you're only allowed to use?
It's just not fair.
Like pants.
You're not returning anything because you don't own anything.
Because it's not physical.
Point. That's what I'm
It's not
me.
Physical. The media that you hold is yours. The disc would be yours. but the content of the disc would not be yours.
Yeah,
there's an interesting point as well about theft, is that you can't steal information. So whether the bits and bytes constitutes information and not a physical entity. If you had a disc that had private information on it and I came into your house and stole the disc to get the private information, I could be prosecuted for the theft of the disc, but I couldn't be prosecuted for the theft of the information that's on the disc.
Absolutely, yep.
That's,
so what about piracy?
Piracies, I think the reason that they start writing specific copyright law and why the government's interested in writing these down a bit more thoroughly is the fact that it's very difficult to actually ascertain what you're actually watching with a DVD, because it's not a movie, it's not celluloid, it's not a physical thing, it's bits and bytes.
I have to say that does bring in a dimension of the actual news this week that we haven't covered so far, and that is that the rather draconian measures on websites that I think the US government, definitely, I think New Zealand, France, other places, the UK government is not going to be blocking access to websites that purportedly hosts pirated content, which is an interesting, that's the sense I get. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you need to read that a bit further, because I think what they're saying is that they're not going to be doing individual sites. There's going to be a list published, and that will be enforced by the ISPs. There will still be site blocking, but the way in which that they're saying that the government ruling, that the court ruling has gone for the BT is unworkable. You can't have a situation where you've got individuals suing for the blocking of individuals.
Yeah, I was going to say, James, we covered that last week on the show.
Has that not gone ahead?
The government is saying it's unworkable, but there's a court order saying that has to be done. They won in, the MPA won in court. Therefore, BT will have to block that site, and they're talking about coming back to court in October to find out how it's going to be done. But in terms of that as a mechanism moving forward, all of that was civil. That was the MPA suing BT, citing legislation. It wasn't a government-run thing. It wasn't a prosecution. It wasn't a statute.
But I think what the government is just saying is this is just ridiculous, all these individual infringements. And I remain optimistic that there is somebody actually thinking sense. And this comes down to even these patent infringement things where Microsoft is getting onto Google and vice versa, not vice versa because Google doesn't yet. HTC have been sued. It's all these tiny little court cases which are just completely they're clouding, they're obfuscating the real stuff which is going on, which is people wanting to buy stuff which is available. I don't know, maybe I'm just wrong.
I mean, for what they're saying there in the situation of the courts being blocked up with individual civil cases is not the way forwards. It's completely unworkable. Therefore, there will be a list issued by government that ISPs will be forced to block, and you can petition to have sites added to it rather than having to block up the court system, which I've got to say I agree entirely with. Mm-hmm. I think that's perfectly true. Eric, you got us onto this patents thing. When patents attack Android, the official Google blog. What's the background to this story then, everyone? Because I've got to say, I haven't seen this until this evening.
Well, I hadn't seen it until we were getting started here anyway. So
that'll teach you to keep your trap shut, won't it? Eh?
Yeah.
You've been reading that instead of Euler's.
So essentially, the strange thing that kicked this off is that I guess in response to the purchasing of Nortel's patent portfolio by Apple and Microsoft and a consortium of folks, the guy's title is, David Drummond, Senior Vice President and Chief Legal Officer at Google, posted on the official Google blog.blogspot.com, when patents attack Android, this was posted yesterday, and he said, Android's success has yielded something else too, a hostile, organized campaign against Android by Microsoft, Oracle, Apple, and other companies waged through bogus patents. And he goes on to say how unfair this is. He says, we are not naive. Technology is tough and ever changing, and we work very hard to stay focused. But in this instance, we thought it was important to speak out and make it clear that we're determined to preserve Android as a competitive choice for consumers by stopping those who are trying to strangle it. And then Microsoft, and I haven't gotten to see their response, but Microsoft apparently published something on their own public blog, saying that Google was wrong about that. And Google wrote back, it's not surprising that Microsoft would want to divert attention by pushing a false gotcha while failing to address the substance of the issues we raised. If you think about it, it's obvious why we turned down from Microsoft's offer, meaning the offer to, actually, that is what Microsoft countered with. They said, well, we offered Google the chance to join us in the consortium of folks buying the Nortel patents.
And they refused, yeah.
Novell.
Nortel.
Yes, it was a Brad Smith tweet. I could see. I'll post the link in the chat room saying Google said we bought Novell patents to keep them from Google. Really? We asked them to bid jointly with us. They said no.
There's actually, you know, I didn't notice until you just said that, but it says both Nortel and Novell.
Yeah.
I think it was the Novell one, wasn't it?
There might have been two.
It mentions both. It says the winning $4.5 billion bid for Nortel's patent portfolio.
It's the patent portfolio of Nortel that was up for sale. They estimated it at $1 billion and it's actually gone for $4.5 billion. But I think the point that he's saying is that the hogging of patents without their active use is then anti-competitive, and that will attract antitrust lawyers and also the EU for antitrust as far as competition commission and that kind of stuff would go. You can't buy something and then sit on it. It's an anti-competitive behavior.
Yeah, but then the reason that they're buying them is to prevent against future lawsuits. So is Google therefore saying that they would like Microsoft to buy them and then sue Google? I mean, I don't really understand what the complaint is.
It is to choke innovation. This is no different, I think, probably than the oil firms buying up patents for electric vehicles in the 70s and buying up energy efficient. There was always the thing about the car that Noel Edmonds backed in the 70s that they had guaranteed would do 100 miles per gallon. There was a technology associated with it. And the conspiracy theory says that the oil firms, one of the oil firms, bought the technology, bought the patent from the guy for a ridiculous sum of money so effectively they could bury it. Until such time as they wanted to release it or just bury it full stop. And that's what they're talking about here. That is the anti-competitive nature of patent purchase.
What's quite interesting about this story, though, is that there's quite a lot of, I don't know whether it necessarily is PR, but there are these public pronouncements by Google and Microsoft, and they're having this spat very much in public. And that's the thing that amuses me. As you said, the thing about the oil company purportedly buying the idea was very much undercover. But this is kind of like people flying their flags, people almost trying to get one up on each other. And that's what makes it a news story, really.
I mean, this is an episode of Star Trek where you've got two boulder monsters smashing it out between each other with Kirk and Spock at the bottom as little tiny incy bitty things, which are the consumers. Yep. They're going to have this high level fight over patents, and there's going to be a lot of people make a lot of money from legal firms deciding whether it's right or it's wrong. Then the EU Commission for Anti-Competitive Behaviour is going to step in. Same process in the States is going to step in. And at the end of it, what's going to happen is that the consumer is going to get leveraged and forced out of an innovative market because of the fact that some large corporation wants to control patent release and wants to stop innovation, unless they're the ones doing it.
The direct and kind of vicious tone of this is what's unusual, especially coming from Google. I can't think of any instance where they've done anything that strikes this kind of a tone. I mean, here he's saying a hostile organized campaign against Android waged by Microsoft, Oracle, and Apple and these other rock star people, or the group of rock stars, quote unquote, who conspired to... What did he say? They did this by banding together to acquire Novell's old patents to make sure Google didn't get them, seeking $15 license fees for every Android device, attempting to make it more expensive for phone manufacturers to license Android, more expensive to license Android than to license Windows 7, and then suing other people who were trying to build, like HTC and Motorola and Samsung, who were building Android phones. Of course, I saw the counter argument to this, at least in terms of what the law is as opposed to what it should be, is that, well, didn't Google know this getting into the phone business, that this was a very litigious, very patent heavy industry, and that now they may be saying, it may be a little bit disingenuous of them to say, oh, we never knew that they were going to do this, we didn't know there was all these patent disputes at the heart of mobile phone technology. People are saying, of course they did. But of course, then you quickly get to the other argument, which is, well, how many patents for the connection of a device to a wireless network do we need? Or how many patents do we need that cover the selection of an item from a menu? You know, a lot of bogus patents are out there.
Mm. And it's solely made to either the people block or make money off it. But the real people who are making the money, I think it was Ewan who made the point, are the lawyers and the people who are just taking these things to court and saying, right, rubbing their hands, if you want a changing career right now, Eric, you can make a massive amount of money in the next 5 years just being a patent lawyer or somebody who's there to grab as much money as they can for a company and take a cut of it.
I think there's two things at play here.
I'm updating my CV now.
And the first one is that if you want to register a patent for a function there has to be something that comes forward that says, unless you've implemented this functionality, you can't then hold a patent on it. You can't carpet bag. You can't register and sit on a patent proposal without taking it forward and doing something legitimate with it. If someone else then does want to do that, you lose the rights to that patent. And I think the other thing that you've got with this thing is it's a really difficult to try and draw the line here between a competitive market and leveraging the market. You're talking as an analogy. I'm a firm that manufactures red bricks. Eric's a builder who builds a large facility out of red bricks, and I sell him a pile of red bricks. But then Sarah is another builder who wants to use red bricks. And instead of buying red bricks from me, what she actually does is buy me. And then what she says is, Eric, there's no more red bricks coming to you. You can't carry on with your red brick building unless you pay me $1,000 a brick, which means that Eric now deliberately loses money on everything that he sells in a contract that he's bound into, where he purchased stuff believing that he was going to make money on it. He now longer is he's going to make a loss. That is anti-competitive behavior. But a lot of people will look at that as the free and open market. And hey, you know, if Sarah's big enough to buy the entire brick manufacturers, what of it? That's the way life works.
Is it the ownership of the patents have already been registered, or is this the creation of new patents that haven't?
No, Nortel owned the patents.
Wow, that's crazy, isn't it?
And yeah, some of these patents are quite old.
Yeah.
And a group of people have bought the patents under which Google, as far as I understand, are implementing their Android system.
But you, and to extend your brick making metaphor a little bit further, you know, I philosophically, if you made a new, if you patented a new process for making red bricks, and they were like these amazing indestructible space age and the super amazing bricks whose entire composure was new and innovative in itself as a whole product or a whole type of material, I would absolutely say that you and Rankin should have exclusive rights to that and the ability to sell and profit off of that as you see fit. But what happens with stuff like this is your patent portfolio wouldn't just say like a method for making new indestructible red bricks. It would be like dozens of patents or hundreds even that say like that patent the pouring of clay into a mold.
That's what I'm trying to get to.
The little incremental procedures that are completely obvious and in use by everyone already. In many cases, people aren't even checking for prior art, for prior existence of these things. They just rubber stamp these things that say, they searched for and found items in a database. I'll let them patent that. And so you get 1,000 patents that sound exactly the same like that.
Hmm. What's quite interesting
rather the incremental steps that themselves are not a product, that don't amount to anything.
But what you've done there is you've highlighted the fact that these patents, these incremental steps clearly have existed, but no one has seen fit to enforce them until now.
There was a thing that came out a little while ago where there was, I can't remember who it was. They'd filed a patent for access to a mobile computing platform in a store. That was their idea. And someone wanted to make something and they were put, you know, it was Apple, and they put a stop to it. They came forward and said, oh, no, you can't do that because we've got the patent on this. And what was different about this thing was that they'd actually gone out and built these information workstations, and they were actually in stores. There was 1,000 of them across the US where people were going, could type information and get information back off them. And you look at that kind of patent dispute and you think, I don't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. You've registered a patent, you've gone and built the item for the patent that you've registered, yeah. And someone else wants to come and build exactly the same thing, but you beat them to it. Fair and square, that's what a patent's for. But if you get this idea, as Eric says, you know, this concept of adding one thing on top of another, placing a block on top of a second block, there you go, I've patented the idea of building blocks. If you don't go out and make building blocks and sell them as a product, you shouldn't have the right to that patent.
But that's the point, though. These patents were registered several years ago, which means somebody was incredibly clever and cynical and said, "One of these days, we're going to call bank on this and go for it." Yeah, and that they haven't already either means they missed the boat when obviously Nortel was still in business, which is ridiculous, really, because they could have probably kept themselves afloat with the proceeds of it, or they patented it for the general good to make sure it protected people rather than became something which was worth vast amounts of money. I don't know.
I mean, there's a good point in the chat room here. Carl just basically says there should be no patents for vaporware. There's got to be a time period at which you have to implement it. Otherwise, you end up with an Orwellian kind of thing. I write a novel, therefore I own the patent on flying all spaceships because I made, you know, Millennium in 2001. You know.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
So you guys think that even let's suppose even a demonstrable prototype was made that fully proved that this thing was possible, the technology was possible and works. You don't think someone should be able to sit on that? Like, what if they wanted?
No, that's fine.
What if you wanted to be able to produce, or you just wanted to be able to sell the process to various manufacturers who would then make their UN rank and indestructible red bricks under their own label? Wouldn't you like to be able to do that?
I don't have a problem with that either. If you can make a prototype, then that's all you need to do. You don't need to sell it commercially as long as you can proof concept is there. If you just come up with an idea that says, I'm going to let one and one add up to two, then you can't sit on that unless you've got something that shows that one and one add up to two, a building block system that adds up to a pile of building blocks. There's got to be something that actually is physical, that is there, which is usable, which is real, which is concrete, or that there has to be a time period perhaps in which you do it. Patent laws are absolutely screwed.
I think we both agree on the same point, but yeah. I'm coming from a slightly different from saying I don't care as much, because I don't think I do, about whether the thing has actually been built, more than I care about, is this actually something that you really thought of that really is creative that no one else would have thought of or already has been doing? Because if it's something like, I don't think you should be able to patent, I clicked a menu, it came down and I clicked another option. Or when I searched it, it searched through three databases at the same time. I mean, there's so much of that really obvious little piddly crap that goes on that I think should be not allowed just because it's so fundamental to the way people do anything on computers.
Well, I think the one patent that I think is a really good example of that is the Apple patent for multi-touch. Multi-touch has been around since two people hit the same key on a typewriter, but Apple patented multi-touch, and whether they're collecting any license fees on that with other devices that use multi-touch, or whether they're just existing and saying, well, look, you know, for the good of the people, for the good of the world, we're not going to enforce that patent, I don't know. But there is a thing, if you don't enforce patents, you lose them as well, don't you?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but Ewan, that's actually a very interesting point, because the way Apple has gone ahead with multi-touch kind of shows how the world would be fine and companies would be profitable and innovative even if patents like this didn't even exist. Because here, Apple hasn't really been able, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they've ever had a successful lawsuit against someone where that totally won in their favor for violating their multi-touch patents. And yet, they're on top of their game. Like you said, multi-touch has been around for years before the iPhone, but they were the first to really make it popular and profitable. And now, even after years of other companies making Android devices and similar devices have, in Apple's opinion, ripped off their patents, Apple's still making money hand over fist. So even if the patents were proven invalid or could never have been registered in the first place, hasn't hurt them here.
Yeah,
this is what comes down to my point. It's the fact it's all about making a quick buck out of other people's creations. I mean, the whole HTC thing is the perfect example. Adding $5 onto a price of an HTC phone because they've used some of your technology is bogus, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, it depends what the technologies and how they've used it. But I think the point there that Eric's making about multi-touch and the fact they've actually applied it, you've got to be careful, because if you don't enforce your patent and you don't sue for maluse of it, then you lose the right to it, even if it's never upheld. As long as you've tried to fight it, that's all that matters. If you've got a complete laissez-faire attitude to it, you'll lose the right to that patent, it'll be taken off you.
But that's the whole point with the Android thing, because it's an open platform, nobody necessarily owns the patents, which puts them at a disadvantage, doesn't it?
I would say be careful talking about Android being an open platform in that sense. There will be rights held, it's just whether they're enforceable or not, and whether the licensing allows for free use of, etc. or not. But I guarantee you that Google hold some kind of, if you've got Android, there has to be a licensing agreement that's for the use of Android. I disbelieve that Google would give it out and say, no, it's license free, it's there's no constraints, there's no ownership requirements. There's got to be something there that they're holding ownership to it, I would think. That's a guess, though. But most of what I've said tonight is a guess anyway as well, so there we go. Go on.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say how if you want to be scared by, well, one other point is that from what I hear, the people who grant these patents and rubber stamp them for approval and make them official really have no basis to be doing that as their profession. You know, they're not engineers. They're not any software engineers or people who really know that stuff. So when they look at a patent that, like, I'm just picturing one of Apple's recent ones was like a patented concept with a drawing of an iMac screen that folds down to become like a tablet. I mean, that's so obvious, right? If you want to make a touchscreen desktop screen, making it fold down so that it's more like a writing surface is obvious. You know, so who are these people saying no, it's not. You own that now, Apple.
I would like to draw your attention to the fact that 6 weeks ago on the Mac show, when Lion was first touted out by Apple, I said, I reckon Apple are going for the end game is for touch. There you go. And there's the patent right there. You listen to me. I have no clue what I'm talking about. Right. Our sponsors. UK2.net, we've got a new logo look, a nice new badge. BagelTech is powered by UK2.net because we bloody are, that's for sure. We have got an enormous amount of gratitude to them. They have been significant in our growth in the last few months. Please, please, please support UK2.net. They are our life and soul, our blood. They're the people that keep us afloat. They absorb all the bandwidth that we've got. We got a note from them yesterday saying, are you aware of the fact that you nearly used all your bandwidth? Yes, sorry, awfully sorry. Okay, well, we'll stick you onto a different server then. So they've given us a brand new server that's bigger and faster and has a ton of extra bandwidth for us. So thank you ever so much, UK2. Much appreciated. They keep our podcasts out there for you to download, and they keep the bandwidth going and they keep the network running. Simple as that. Please go to bageltechnews.com. And if you want to sign into your UK2 account, then go down to the bottom. You'll find the UK2 logo. It's the one that I've just shown you there. I was going to show the wrong picture then, but never mind. Click on the UK2 logo. That's got a tracking on it. They'll know that you've come from BagelTech. Like I say, even if you just want to sign into your account, please, please, please do that. And then when you go around the site, they'll know where you've gone. They'll have everything that you've got. And then when you go to checkout, in the coupon code, type in BagelTech, all one word, and the price of what's ever in your cart will come down by 15%. And guess what? People still are putting BagelTech in. They're still going through from our website and not putting the offer code in and not getting the 15% off. You're a bunch of muppets.
You should file a patent for the putting of the BagelTech coupon code into a field. That.
And I could take 10% on top.
Exactly.
Dude. There you go, UK2.net. Please, please, please support them. They mean the world to us. And also Wirecast. Now, they're on the bottom of that page. There we go, Wirecast. We've got a nice link with them. They've given us several copies of Wirecast to give away. And we've got another one to give away this month. If you would like a copy of Wirecast, it's a $500 piece of software. The answer is dead simple. We've joined all the shows together this month to come up with what we're going to do for Wirecast. And it's very simple. All you've got to do is go down to an Apple store, a Fry's Electrical, a Best Buy, a PC World, a Curry's, a Comet, a Dixon's, any electrical store that's got computers, even an internet cafe, and you've got to get as many instances of BagelTech on the screens in that store, and then you've got to get a picture of yourself and all of those screens with them on. We'll count the number of screens that we can see, and whoever sends in the picture with the most illuminated screens with a BagelTech logo on it will get a copy of Wirecast. It's a straightforward fight. There we go. And if there's a tie break, we'll come up with a question of some description that sorts it out between the two of you. So get yourself down to your local Apple store or electrical store, anywhere that's got internet and anywhere that's got lots and lots of screens. Get the BagelTech homepage up on those screens or logos. There's logos available on the Flickr group, and stick them on those machines and take a picture. The more you get on, the more chance you got of winning. There you go. Yardstick's not been set yet, but I'd be expecting to get sort of 10, 15, 20 maybe. That'd be good.
Photoshop will make you disqualified.
Yes, if I could pick out that it's Photoshopped, you're in deep pup. Judge's decision's final. There we go. Have we got any cool thingies? James, have you got a cool thingy for us?
I do. One of my colleagues brought this into work today, and it is quite amazing. It's called the EPAD Transformer TF-101. I don't know if you've seen this. It's basically a tablet that plugs into it plugs into a keyboard to turn it into a netbook, and it looks really nice. It's a dual core Android honeycomb device. Let me just post a link into the chat room. It really is very pretty, and it's basically a tablet.
Asus.
It's a tablet which you can carry around with you running honeycomb, and then you plug it into the thing and you've got a little laptop with you. It's really neat.
So this is the Asus add-on.
Yes, it's around about £420 all in, which is cheaper than a more expensive iPad, for example. But it's I like it. Really nice looking machine.
Doesn't that keyboard look like the ZX Spectrum? Don't you think?
Yes, it does a bit, but yeah. It's kind of like that chocolate block thing, isn't it?
Okay, maybe not then. Is it actually connected, or is it just Bluetooth?
The brilliant thing about it is there's a battery in the tablet and a battery in the keyboard, so it can run for 18 hours solid.
That's because that would be interesting. If there's no physical connection, which it doesn't look like that there is, you could use that with an iPad potentially.
No, there is a connection. I think there is a plug on it. But yes, I suppose you may be able to use it as a Bluetooth keyboard. I don't know.
I can't see Bluetooth anywhere, though, on the description. That's what suggests that it's not. But I'll keep having a look.
But it really
it's got Bluetooth, yes.
Beautiful.
It's got wireless data, Bluetooth, version 2.1. So, yeah, it's a Bluetooth connection. There you go. You can use it with your iPad as well. Might solve your problems if you've got an iPad 1, because it looks like it would fit if it's a similar kind of size.
Yeah.
10 inches, there we go, 10.1, so it might work just nice. I might go and see if I can find one of these and have a go at the weekend. I think Best Buy sell Asus stuff over here, and maybe PC World do. Good one. Spectrum QL, says Spectrum Carl QL. In the chat room.
With a micro drive.
Who on earth has an iPad 1? Yeah, thanks, mate. Get stuffed, I do. Bollocks. Time code, 71 minutes. Mike, have you got a cool thing for us?
I do, an iPhone game, Cut the Rope Experiments, which is a sequel to one of my favourite iPhone games, Cut the Rope. It's more of the same, really, if you played it, which is it's 59p 99. It's a little puzzle game where you have to feed candy to an alien.
And Cut the Rope is one of my favourites as well. The number of times I got stuck for an hour doing something that I shouldn't and just sitting cutting the rope. Is anyone finding at the moment that the tracking of your finger on iPad 1 is not very good when you've got those joint games, the ones that run on iPhone and iPad?
The tracking. Are they laggy or off? Or
no, they're off. Basically, you swipe where you think you're going and it actually swipes somewhere else completely.
I've never had that problem.
Caused by a software update, or it's always done this?
I've noticed it's got worse a lot more recently. It's applications that will do both that seem to be the problem. It could be my big pork sausages, so I'm well aware of the fact. It could be operator error, most definitely. Sarah, what sad book have you got for us this month? Week?
Sorry?
What book have you got for us this week?
It's not a book.
You had a phenomenal library of books the other week. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I've still got the same library. Don't think I've added to it since, but no, my cool thing this week, I bought a new 24-inch monitor last week. You saw a bit of it earlier when I was showing you the test website, and I'm really impressed with it. So £155 from Amazon, I thought that was a bargain. So I actually discovered this particular monitor because we use them at work. We bought a whole batch of them. Everyone's got them. So
you didn't nick one, though.
Sorry?
You didn't nick one from work.
No. And I've been very careful to make sure I hang on to the invoice for it as well, in case there's ever a dispute about it. But it's I thought £155 for a 24-inch monitor. It was a bit of a bargain. So.
There are some expletives in the chat room about the price. It is that good.
Yeah, I know. That's what I thought.
Very good.
I mean, I've been thinking about getting another one. In fact, I was so impressed, I'm actually thinking I might even buy another one.
Cool. So, well, if you want to give one away, I'll have one.
Well, no. The thing is, at the moment, my main computer is a laptop, but my next one will probably be a desktop. So having two of those would be absolutely brilliant. So
Alex is suggesting in the chat room. Alex is suggesting in the chat room, if you take it and put it next to a mirror when you look at certain angles, you'll have to anyway. He saved you 155 quid. There we go. Eric, I'm wondering whether I should bother asking the question or not, but have you got a cool thingy for us?
Oh, how can you not think I have a serious cool thingy? Come on. My cool thingy today is the delicious taste of Coca-Cola Zero. With zero calories and even a better taste than Diet Coke, it's my choice for calorie-free cola.
You really are pathetic, man.
Thank you.
I mean that in a good way.
How could it not be taken?
Hey, I have two options. I'll save that one. I won't even say that.
Very good. My pick, my cool thingy is... shirts. There you go. I've got my Think Mac t-shirt on. If you want one of our shirts, you can go to our store, which is bageltech.spreadshirt.co.uk, and you can order what you want. There's a whole load of slogans on there. I'm a big boy if you're a big show listener. I've got a long lens if you're a photo show listener. There's a ton of stuff in there. There's some mugs and that kind of stuff. They're actually nice quality shirts, and the printing's pretty good on them. Not bad at all. And
Had you forgotten to pick anything, or was this your pick from the start?
No, this is my blatant cool thing.
Okay,
he's wearing his cool thing.
I'm wearing my cool thing, mate. It's what have you bought this week that's really really cool? There you go. There's the Hostile Recon shirt for photo journalists who want to go out in London and get shot. There's the Raw Baby one. That's a cool one. And then we've got some Linux Girl ones and that kind of stuff. As well,
there's can't a whole think who they're aimed at.
Well, I'll only sell one of those probably, Sarah. I bet it's you. There's one that says Mac Girl as well. There we go.
Yeah, right, like I'm going to wear that.
Now, if you buy one of these shirts, the good thing is that people wanted to donate stuff to Bagel Tech. I don't really want your donations. I'd rather you had something for it. So when you buy one of these shirts, we get £5. That's it. Every shirt is £5. Every mug we get £2. And that's our total take. Everything else is theirs and the cost of the productions and that kind of stuff. So every time you buy a shirt, you can guarantee that £5 is going to Bagel Tech. And it's £5 that we stick in an account. And when it's all together, then we will buy equipment and that kind of stuff for the office for it. There is no line in my pocket keeping us in beer and pizza and burgers and sausages for the next barbecue. There we go. Not forgetting, of course, the next Bagel Tech Bash is the 6th of July. Definitely. It's already
July.
Friday, 6th of July.
July?
2012.
Oh, 2012. Oh,
I'm getting
wow.
it in early. I'm getting it early.
Wow, that was organised.
Real planning.
It's basically the same day as it was this year.
Well, no, it's the birthday. The 6th is the birthday. Eric, you coming over?
Oh, right, okay. I didn't realise. Yeah, of course.
We had it on the 8th this year, you see. Because it's a leap year, it's gone to the 6th. You coming over, Eric?
No, I'm afraid not.
Kyle's coming over from the Philippines, mate.
You good
could,
heavens.
The least thing you could do.
We'll have you in the kitchen. Run me that transatlantic fiber optic cable for internet connection, then we'll talk.
Yeah, we'll have you in the kitchen on the speaker again. There we go. Right, we'll be back again tomorrow morning with the Bagel Tech News Show, and then we've got the Mac Show at 1 o'clock and the Photo Show at 3 o'clock with your questions. We've had an angry rant letter as well for the Photo awesome. Show, which is brilliant. So I'll be reading that one out as we go through tomorrow. And I've had a few exchanges on Twitter with the guy, so it was a bit of name calling, but there we go. Goes with
when
the
are you reading that?
I'll read it out tomorrow on the Photo Show, 3 o'clock. Promise. And then it'll be the weekend then. We'll do some editing. And then we'll be back again on Monday with the Daily Show and so on and so on and so forth. The F1 show is posted in iTunes now. So if you want to go and subscribe to that, you can. And you can get our latest episode, which was the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
But I'm well aware of the fact that as a podcast, it's pretty much the shelf life's about 2 days, and then it's kind of pointless after that, really, isn't it? So there you go. Have a go. Some people have downloaded it and some nice comments on Twitter. Thank you very much. And also, we had a big push on reviews and downloads this week. Please, please, please carry that on because it was fantastic. It really propelled us forwards. We got up to the number 2 podcast in iTunes on Tuesday, which was really, really nice for tech news, and the number 4 podcast for technology total in the UK. So we were very, very well done. And at one point we had 4 podcasts in the top 30. Thank you very much. Please keep downloading us. Please keep subscribing. Please keep telling everyone. I'll tell you what it is in a few weeks, why I need you to do it, but please keep pushing because at the moment it's making a world of difference to us and it will reap benefits for us in the end. But I can't say any more than that. There we go. I'll keep in touch. Where can we get a hold of you, James?
You can get a hold of me, not unfortunately, the Great British Beer Festival, which is happening towards the end of this week. What's happening at the moment? I've missed it, which is why I'm having a celebratory Wells Banana Bread beer, and I can't hold my liquor, which is why I'm slurring my words just an hour into the show.
Banana bread beer?
Sorry? Oh, dude, banana bread beer, yeah.
Really nice.
It tastes like banana bread?
Yes.
Yes.
Yuck.
I've never heard of that.
It's gorgeous, Sarah. It is gorgeous.
I don't like bananas.
Stunning. All right.
If you don't like bananas, you won't like it.
Who cares?
SYZYGY, Syzygy on Twitter.
Eric, Google banana bread beer, mate, and see if you can get a supplier.
No thanks, but I'll look it up anyway.
Don't you like beer then?
I don't think I would enjoy it either. No, I just, anything that has fake banana flavor, I just really, I've never enjoyed it.
No, it's brewed from bananas.
Well, still.
It's not fake. You know,
bananas are one of the things that's like, it's like, I think I like them until I eat one and it's like, yeah, that reminds me why I haven't had one in a while.
Okay, well, maybe not then. No taste. You're drinking Coke Zero, of course, no taste. There we go. Mike, where can we get you, mate?
You can find me at thepodcastingproject.com and on Twitter, I'm at imike, I-M-Y-K-E.
Or fast asleep in the lunchroom at work.
Yes, I do that as well.
Oh, dear, dear. Mate, it's a fast way to the grave, daytime sleeping.
That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it.
You were sticking to the chair as well, then.
I was.
Sarah, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
You can get a hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Righto. And finally, Eric.
ericlanigan.com, twitter.com/ericlanigan, all that stuff. ericlanigan.
Have you started back with Tech Talk Back yet?
No, I did training last night with Jammer B and them, and then Eileen said that the set's not ready, so yeah, it's still on hiatus.
Okay. So more beer and pizza and sunbathing. Never mind.
We'll see.
See you soon. Take care. Thanks for listening.